there, everybody. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial. Bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. 1 p.m. Tuesdays and Wednesdays. A lot of people, you can't imagine how many people I know who fight for fairness and balance in society. Activists, fighters, taking up the causes of the less powerful. Animal activists, children activists, green activists. Yet, the very same people, the same people who fight for the rights of others, are less than active about their own lives. They're frequently dominated or intimidated at home. You could fear the physical power of a mate. I could understand that. You know, let's say you have a husband who, or a wife who's 100 pounds heavier than you and wields a heavy hand, and you're isolated and you can't get away and you're locked in. All right, you could fear that. I could understand fearing that. But nowadays, usually there's an escape route for everybody. Or you could fear the emotional terrorism of a mate. That's what most people do. They're afraid of mates. You know, most people are so afraid of their own anger. They're so afraid of getting angry that what they do is they succumb immediately to the anger of another. All they have to do is see a little rage and they back off right away. There are certain types of people, especially the individualist, the person who likes to be live in their own kind of cave. The person who may be a specialist or, you know, but they live a private life. If they have a mate who emotionally terrorizes them, they just dig in deeper and deeper into the cave and they hope it's going to blow over. It's like trying to hide your head in a typhoon. Hide your head in a typhoon? Sure. It's like ducking in the cellar. You know, this is going to blow over any minute now. And you keep waiting for it to blow over, and you know if you say anything, they're just going to get more angry and more rageful. So you keep, yes, yes, I agree, yes. Well, okay, that may work. What if you're somebody who just wants to make peace? So then you try to calm the other person down by making promises, yes, and then, oh, well, doing everything you say, and you do it that way also. Because you're terrified of getting into the battle. Because in truth, if somebody's raging at you, the last thing you want in the world is to rage back, because that's not going anywhere. You wind up hitting each other. So that usually doesn't work very well, except for maybe the makeup part is good afterwards, but it doesn't... maybe that's a secret. Maybe that's why we do it. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I'm looking at power exchange with you, and we'll be taking your calls today about this issue at 212-957-2729. Power exchange. Could it be that the very reason we have these positions where one person dominates the other is not because we just can't figure out another way to be, but because we want it to be that way? Is there something about it that's appealing? Now, you can't imagine that, right? We keep hearing about victims and victims and victims, people who are victims of terrorist bosses, terrorist husbands, terrorist wives, except nowadays you got a lot of outs. We were hearing yesterday, I was talking about the military, about the victims in the military. But today, nowadays, you got a lot of ways out of things. So why would people want to stay in a relationship where they are powerless? Could there be something positive about being powerless? Well, let's think about that. You know, what's nice about being powerless? One thing about it is you don't make any choice. You don't have to make any decisions. Right? There's one. So you don't have to make any decisions at all. If you're powerless and you have somebody who says to you, you know, I'll tell you everything to do, you know, what you do is you take, you say to yourself, okay, I'll do nothing but what you say. I know a person in particular who does that with her mate. Every time a mate gives her some kind of an instruction, she goes with the instruction and she says, yes, I'll do whatever you say. So one thing about being submissive in a relationship is you relinquish having to make decisions. Isn't that wonderful? Imagine, my friends, imagine most of the adult you. Imagine that you never had to make another decision. Wouldn't that be a relief? Wouldn't it be a relief? I mean, you know, you make so many decisions nowadays. You make a decision from the minute you wake up. What am I going to wear? How am I going to go? Who am I going to talk to? Who do I have to do? Imagine no decisions. Do you imagine that there's a point of wealth where you get so rich that you could wake up and not make a decision? I'll bet there is. In fact, I know somebody like that. No, it's up. Today I woke up and I just decided to sleep all day. But he made a decision, you see. He decided to sleep all day. But even that's the ultimate decision. But, you know, imagine if you were just free of it. Imagine if everything you did was choreographed for you. This is what you do. You walk step A, step B, step C. Can you imagine any appeal to that? Well, there must be, because, you know, it's like having a daddy or having a mommy. It was something beautiful about having parents. It was something nice about having your mother walk you down the street by the hand, right? Telling you where to walk and how to walk. Your father carrying you on his shoulders, you know, leading you along. Isn't that a lovely thing? Isn't that wonderful? Maybe that's part of the appeal of it. Secondary appeal is it frees you from your own aggression, from your own anger. If you have somebody who is so powerfully dominating you, you don't even have a chance to raise your voice. You raise your voice and they scream. And then you get this tertiary gain and this other motive, which is you say it's for the children. See, then you have children. Now, why would two people who have such a difficult relationship have children? Because the children are like hooks. They're like anchors. You nail the children in there, and now you say, we can't yell at each other in front of the children. So that means you could humiliate me, you could talk badly about me, you could do whatever you want, but I'm not going to respond because of the children. And I won't leave because of the children. So now what do you think the children feel? The children look at their wimpy fathers and their wimpy mothers, and they say, oh, this is what love is like. Our telephone number here is 212-957-2729. We have people on the line already, but we're not going to take the calls right away because I want to go further with this. The question is, what is the positive effect? The positive, the reasons why we would choose one or another position. Let's talk about dominance and submission. It's a set of behaviors, customs, and rituals involving the giving by one individual to another complete control over their being. Who would do that? Physical contact is not a necessity. It can be conducted anonymously over a telephone, through email, or other messaging services. In other cases, it could be intensely physical, sometimes traversing into sex. In the dominant-submissive relationship, both parties take pleasure or erotic enjoyment from either dominating or being dominated. Now, this you have to figure. Now, you know a lot of guys, or I know a lot of guys, who say they love being in charge. I know a lot of women who say they love being in charge. In a study in 1995, 89% of the women who were active in this kind of an exchange expressed a preference for the submissive role. That's in 1995. 89%. 71% of heterosexual males preferred a dominant initiator. Recent research about heterosexual exchanges kind of blurred the lines a little bit because there's some exchanges that go back and forth. Someday you'll be this, someday I'll be that. So we're just learning what is preferred. But in most of these relationships, you find men would prefer to be dominant. Of course they do. Now, why and what does it mean? What does it mean for a man? Because a man feels powerless in life, and he wants to feel powerful somewhere. I always watch the way people walk their dogs. You know, what kind of freedom does your dog have? You have a dog. I've seen men who walk dogs like Doberman pinschers, and they have these big, big collars around their necks, and they have chains, or women who walk dogs, and they have these chain neck things. And if the dog kind of moves an inch away, they pull on it, they yank on it. And I wonder what their relationships are like with people. The dog has no freedom at all, and they get this kick out of dominating the animal. So do you, what's your own need for it? And here's the real question for you. The real question for you is, which do you prefer? Which role do you prefer? And of course you're going to tell me that you think there's something wrong with preferring either. And I'm saying, no, 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 dig deep down. What would you rather do? Be in charge or not be in charge? And help me do a radio program today that's unusual. Instead of talking about what's politically correct, let's talk about the truth. Because in every politically correct relationship, I see people who have the ideal of, oh, it should be a balance, it should be this, but then when they act it out, it's one way or another. A long while ago, I partook in a relationship study called the Train Game. It was the most interesting thing. In the Train Game, Peter Hogan was my mentor. They used videotape to photograph people who played a game. And in this game, there was a train on both sides of a track, and there was a blind in the middle. The blind showed that you couldn't see the other person, what the other person was doing. And what you had to do is you had to arrive at the train station on time, but you were on the same track as your opponent. Not your opponent, but your partner, who was also on that track, and the two of you were going to arrive together at the train station. What you did is if you got there together on time perfectly within 3 seconds, you got $1. If you got there ahead of the other person, you got 50 cents. If you crashed, you lost all your money. So now the idea of everybody was trying to do is they were trying to arrive at the same time. But you found over and over again through this train game where people were talking to each other over a blind. They were talking to each other with the thing separating them. They couldn't see each other's tracks. So I'm telling you what to do, and you're telling me what to do. It's how I'm telling you what to do and how I'm instructing you that makes the difference. Thank you. Thank you. 212-957-2729. Hey, we've got Diane on the line. Let's say hello to Diane. We're going to go back to more programming. Hold on 1 second. Hi there, Diane.
Hi.
Hi there.
Hi. How you doing?
Good, good. A little louder, if you would.
Okay.
Perfect. So tell me, how do you relate to this subject?
Well, when I first started listening to it, I thought the conversation was going to go a little bit differently.
Okay. What way were you hoping it went?
I thought you were going to talk about people who are in those dominating positions and why they like to be there.
Well, why do you like to be there?
No, I don't like being in the dominating
position. Okay. Do you like being in a submissive position?
No, but I find myself in that position a lot.
Okay, so let's start with this, Diane, okay? Let's imagine, for the sake of inquiry, which is what I do with all my clients, I say, okay, so even though we know you don't want to be there, let's take the part of you that wants to be there, and we'll talk to that part only for a moment.
Okay,
so let's talk to the part of you that wants to be in the submissive position. Tell me the advantage of it.
Why I want to be dominated by someone.
Yes, yes.
Someone who has more education than I have, I would hope that they would be able to teach me something.
Okay, so one of the advantages of being dominated by someone is you learn. You could be a student.
Yes.
That's a good thing. What else?
Mm-hmm. You would like to be taken care of, and I'm not... I don't know if I can relate that.
Well, you're kind of doing well. They would take care of you.
Yes.
They would nurture you.
Nurture, yes.
Yeah, you don't want to be nurtured by somebody who's weak.
No.
You want to be nurtured by somebody who's strong.
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
That's the other advantage. They can nurture you. What else, Diane?
Let's see. Education. Nurturing.
How about freedom? How about the freedom from responsibility, from having to be, to make decisions?
Well, I don't know if I would put myself in that category, because I would like to think that the help that I got from the other two avenues that you just mentioned would help me to be more independent.
Great. Okay, so now in your life, have you had this relationship a couple of times with people where they were dominant?
Yes.
Okay.
I actually volunteer a lot in my life. I have very little education. I have only a high school diploma. And so I've put myself in situations where I've volunteered for certain organizations, hoping, because when I first walked in, they would say, well, when we have a chance, you know, we'll hire you, or when we have a little bit more money, we'll hire you. And that's going on. I'm in my 60s now. I've been volunteering since I was perhaps in my 30s. And like decades of my life have been taken up by believing, and so I feel very betrayed, believing in these organizations.
Okay, so what you did in your mind was you decided to trust that someone would appreciate you if they saw how cooperative you were.
And that you have used me and exploited me.
Wait. Let's not go there, okay? I could blame people right and left. But what they do is they see someone coming in saying, I give you everything I've got. Mm-hmm. And they say, okay, I'll take it. And then there's no payoff.
Absolutely none.
Okay, now let me ask you this. Why didn't you complete your schooling?
Why didn't I?
Yeah, I mean, you had all these years. You're 60 years old. You had all these years. Why didn't you just go back to school and get your degree, if that meant that much to you?
I had a baby when I was very young. I had a baby when I was 19.
Uh-huh.
And it just doesn't go as smoothly as you think it would. I've always lived in neighborhoods where I had to, like, fight drug addicts and fight drug dealers.
I hear you, Diane, but I'll tell you something. You could still do it.
You know, I would like to. In fact, I have a membership in a so-called clubhouse, because I also have a psychiatric disability. And they have this thing where they supposedly help people start businesses, but that's not really what they do. So I asked them, I said, well, can I start a nonprofit? Can you help me? In fact, I still would like to find somebody that would help me.
There you are again, asking for that. And see, you're asking for the same daddy to come along.
Yeah.
Obviously, your father wasn't there, was he?
You teach me, and I'll teach other people.
Yeah. No, you got to try it a different way, Diane. Instead of getting somebody to be good to you, you got to take advantage of the rights that you have, and you have the right to get this education at low cost. You can still do it. At your age, you can still get it if you pursue this, because it would make a big difference to you. It's not about asking somebody else to be kind to you in exchange for your kindness. That doesn't work anymore. It used to work. It doesn't work. It never worked, actually. It actually doesn't work. This is about you taking care of it yourself. Now, there's a reason why.
What? You have all these corporations that are, because it's not just happening to me.
I know, but it's not, you can't keep making them the enemies. I understand. But I'm trying to help you take a step for yourself, yeah.
When is it going to
When you stop it.
End?
When you stop it.
I don't think that's a good enough answer.
Yeah. Oh, Diane. I understand. But that's the only thing we could do, you see. We can't keep hoping for them to be fair and good daddies. They're just not going to do it. They got theirs. So what we have to do is not just rebel from the bottom, but grow our own power. Now, you talk to me as somebody who says you have a great respect for people with a good education. I listen to you. I listen to your choice of words. I listen to the way you structure your sentences. And I say to myself, this is a very intelligent woman. As an intelligent person.
Diploma. That's all I have is a high school diploma.
Yeah, to me, you've got a master's degree in humanity.
Oh, how kind.
And I wish...
That and the Metro card will get me on that subway.
Yeah. I hear the way you see yourself. Anyway, I say to you, press on. Go to the city universities, find your way in the door. There's plenty of stuff out there. There's plenty of stuff that helps people get the education they want. There's going to be a day when Diane gets her degree. And when she does, you're going to march it right in here, and we're going to celebrate together. They even give you life credits. You know, Fordham University gives you credits for having lived a number of years. Yeah, it's called life credits.
Well, I still would like to. I would like to find somebody. And I know what you're saying, that I should.
Yeah, you keep saying find somebody. I know.
Yeah, I know. You keep reiterating.
Yeah, I keep saying find yourself. You got it.
But there are people, I know, because other people have found these mentors. So I know that there are mentors out there. I just can't seem to connect with them. But there are good mentors out there. I know that there are. So, you know, actually, if there's a mentor out there that's listening, I would like them to contact Diane Bronx. Hello?
I got you, Diane. I hear it. I hear it. But Diane, you know what you're Diane? Inviting? You're inviting Diane? The exploiters. You're inviting
not.
Somebody to exploit you. You are. Because if somebody hears it, they say, I'll be her mentor. You know?
But why? So why can't the other side of the equation be there also?
Yeah, so that's, I say you've got to earn it. You become a mentor. Now, have you ever mentored anybody?
I will. You know, whatever somebody teaches me, I will gladly teach many others.
I thank you. Diane, I got to get going. I thank you so much for calling in. If I get any inquiries, you could send me an email. And if I get any inquiries in your direction, I'll send them to you.
My email?
Yes, write me an email. Okay, Armand at thepositivemind.com.
Can I give you my email?
Not over the phone, no.
Okay, all right.
Okay, thank you very much for calling in.
Bye-bye.
See, now that was an open invitation to somebody to come along and say, I'll do just what everybody else did. So at some point, you got to change it. At some point, you got to not be angry at them. Telephone number here is 212-957-2729. Now, in all of these dominant-submissive relationships, the most powerful of them happen around sexuality. There is a reason why people like a powerful, sexual, dominant, submissive relationship. Because in these relationships, there's always a lot of physical exchange. The physical exchange is power. There's slapping. It's heat. There's a lot of emotion. There's a lot of stuff that goes on. And because it goes on, it brings you to a higher level of passion. So the one thing about dominant, submissive, sexual relationships is there is a lot of energy. Now, for many people, orgasm is fleeting. You can kind of get to the orgasm as easily as you can when there's a lot of power behind it. So a lot of physical exchange, a lot of adrenaline, a lot of testosterone, a lot of anger, a lot of stuff that goes into it, even though it seems like you're killing each other, it winds up heightening the experience. Bondage, for example, People always wonder, why do people who are in dominant submissive relationships like bondage? Well, bondage means somebody's tied up. And you're having sex with somebody who's tied up. Why? Why are they tied up? Why do you enjoy it so much? When a person is bound, they tend to struggle against their bindings. And when they struggle against their bindings, they're putting a lot more energy and sexuality into the relationship. They're changing their hormones. So by doing that, they are kind of moving their hormones to a more sexually evolved place. And something about it heightens the experience and leaves room for more access to a sexual release. So this is part of what happens in the dominant submissive relationship. All of it, the spanking, the everything that takes place, the slapping, even though it sounds, so many people will judge it as sick. Well, it's what people do. Now, in these kind of sexual exchanges, there's usually a thing called a safe word. A safe word is especially important when you decide that this is a path that you're going to do with somebody. Let's say you do. The safe word is, it's a sane and consensual expression. It's a person who says, I have a boundary, and when we go over that boundary, I'm going to stop. I'm going to give my safe word. Sometimes it could be Niagara Falls or something. And you say the word, and it automatically stops whatever's going on. Submissives, very often, a person who is submissive sexually, will use the safe word. They'll say the safe word, and that will stop the other person automatically. Dominants also have safe words, because very often they're being pushed by the submissive, who is saying to them, do this or do this, and they're saying, no, that goes beyond my boundaries. So your boundaries have the safe word included. In a sexual relationship that involves physical contact, it's always imperative to have a safe word. If you do, then you're doing it like a responsible adult. Then you're making your own choices sexually. And that's okay by me. Whatever brings you to wherever you want to go, that's okay by me. So we are going to continue with this even further today. We're going to continue going more and more with this. And there are cases where a dominant person may feel things have gone too far. Now remember, a dominant submissive relationship may be sexual or non-sexual, long or short-term, intimate or anonymous. Most adherents search for the essential intensity, trust and intimacy that are required to make any deep relationship possible. These relationships are experienced as the deepest. When I was talking about the train game before, there were a number of different types of relationships that we came up with. There was the cooperative relationship, was a relationship where two people cooperate with each other on everything. There's another one called the collaborative relationship, where people aren't just cooperating, but they're actually planning things together. And then there's the thing that's called the dominant-submissive relationship. Of all of the relationships, the ones that have the highest level of success at lasting the longest are always the dominant-submissive relationships, where the roles are defined. Now, one wouldn't think that makes much sense in today's society. But when you look behind the scenes, that's what shows up. You may not see it. They may look like perfectly normal, natural, but when they're in that home, it's quite different. Hey, this is Armand DeMille. We're challenging some stuff here because people would object. Many people would object to even just talking about it, thinking that it shouldn't be talked about, but this is The Positive Mind. We're going to be with you this week, just today, next week, not at all, and then the week after, on Wednesday. Write it down for yourself, the 18th, I think. We're going to do a very big special on music and psychology together, 2 hours, about how I find music and psychology. Be sure to put that in your calendar. We'll be right back. Hey there, friends. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Help us with our recovery. Go to WBAI.org and help us by joining the Buddy System. The more people we have on a recurrent basis giving money to the station, the less we'll have to have fund drives. Help us cut down on those, and we'll do what we can for you. WBAI.org. Buddy, make a difference.
I want to know. I want to know.
Vorrei sapere.
Vorrei sapere.
I want to know.
Come fa la gente a concepire di poter vivere nelle case d'oggi in scatolati come le acciughe. Nascono i bimbi che han già le rughe. I want to know.
I want to know.
I want to know.
Vorrei sapere.
I want to know.
Vorrei sapere.
Perché la gente.
I want to know.
Non dice niente.
I want to know.
Hi Mr. Hyde. Hi Dr. Jekyll. I costruttori di questi orrori che senza un volto fanno le case dove la carie germoglia già.
Adriano Celentano from Italy, Celentrano, T-R-A-N-O, actually, and he's asking the essential question, I want to know. I want to know why. We're talking about power exchanges between people. Sometimes they're erotic and sometimes they're not. Sometimes they have to do with sex and sometimes they don't. They don't. It's very interesting as it relates to sex, because the initial discovery when one finds out about one's feelings and emotions related to both the need to dominate and the need to be dominated are often discovered at a very early stage of life, sometimes pre-pubertal. Or they may either, you know, because you have these fantasies as a child, and you have these fantasies of either being taken over or being taken over. And it kind of reveals itself in some kind of way. Of course, it's something you can't talk about, because if you talk to somebody about it, they think you're sick. They think you're crazy. We have somebody here in the DeMel Center who specializes in dealing with sexual issues, and Stephanie Dombrin. And one of the things that Stephanie has studied is every one of these things, so there is nothing you could say to her that shocks her. No matter what it is that you reveal, it doesn't surprise her. Usually at the beginning, people don't know where they stand. Generally speaking, no person is either 100% one way or another. What evolves is a tendency to grow towards one end of the scale, and you find that you could find your best mate, your best partner, at the under end of the scale, and eventually you wind up swinging completely in one direction or another. Stage two is the fear stage. You feel uncertain and you're not sure, so you try things out. And then stage three is where you get a full-fledged partner, and you act that on. And then stage four is where you back off from that as well. All right, 212-957-2729. Roz has been very patient with us on the phone. Hi, Roz, this is Armand DeMille. You're on the air.
Okay.
Hey, there you are.
Here I am.
Hi there.
Hi. Can you ask me a question, please?
Sure. So why are you calling me today?
Well, I've always wanted to talk to you, and it's interesting what you're talking about is this exchange of power.
Where have you stood on this whole thing with the exchange of power?
Where have I stood on it?
Yeah, are you somebody who likes to be in control, or are you somebody who likes to have somebody else have the control?
Well, I'd like to think I'd like to be in control, but given the way my relationships turn out, I'm usually the one that's not in control. I always manage to get with people who are unavailable to me.
Well, you see, now let's talk about that for a moment.
Mm-hmm.
That is, there is a thing about that. So let's say, for example, you are saying, I like to be in control, but then I choose somebody who's not available.
Okay.
Right? At the beginning, the person seems to be totally with you, 100%, right?
Right.
And then after a while, something goes on that makes them not be available. They have another commitment to something, or they have something else not available, right?
Right.
Yeah, so what you're doing is you're selecting, by the way, you might look this up, you're selecting what's called nines in the Enneagram. And these are people who at first, when you have a first relationship with them, they're 100%. They are an absolute 100%. I'm all yours. I'm everything you want. I'll give you everything you want. Here I am. I'm fabulous, you know. And then, but they have their way. They have passive-aggressive anger. They're not good at expressing anger. So their passive-aggressive way is by becoming not available. This is the way of getting revenge against people like you. You see? This is their revenge. This is the way they say, okay, you want to be in charge? I'll get even with you. I won't be available. And so that looks like you're in a submissive place, but you're not. You're just getting beaten back.
Huh.
That was a mouthful, huh?
That was a mouthful because I've always thought of myself as a submissive. I always thought this burning desire in the back of my mind to be a dominatrix is kind of a sicko kind of thing for me, but that's really who I am, a dominatrix?
I know. That's what I'm hearing.
Oh,
not
okay.
A dominatrix. Let's not judge it. You know, let's not even give it a name, because when you say dominatrix the way you're saying it, you're giving it a sicko meaning. Let's say you're somebody who wants to be in charge.
Okay.
And that you're not going to settle for any less. And so you're going to be in charge. You're going to choose people who have less willpower than you do. And the thing you have to understand is that people who have less willpower always rebalance through passive-aggressive means. And the way they do that is by becoming suddenly unavailable.
Okay, cool. So you said nine on this scale. What is the scale again?
It's called the Enneagram, E-N-N-E-A-G-R-A-M.
Enneagram. Which number should I be looking for then if I'm a dominatrix?
Well, it's not. It's number one, by calling yourself a dominatrix, you're stepping yourself away from it.
Okay.
Let's not use that. Let's say that you are somebody who prefers to be dominant.
Okay.
We're not looking for a number. We're looking, in fact, I'll tell you what you do. Send me an email, and I'll send you reference points.
Okay?
Rather than try to go through it with you, because even the spelling of the word Enneagram is going to take me too long.
Thank you.
Okay, but, you know, you sound like a brave person, Roz.
I'm pretty brave, yes, I am.
Brave you are, huh? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the problem. Now, have
that's
you
the problem?
Yeah, I mean, have you ever been, have you ever trusted anybody?
I mean, I'm the baby of my family. I think I've always trusted my parents. But I kind of always thought I knew more than they did.
You always knew more than they did, huh?
Yeah.
So what is it that you wanted them to know that they didn't know?
That they could be easier, that they could be more calm, that they could be nicer to each other.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff.
So your dad was not very nice with your mom?
I always thought it was the other way around.
Mm-hmm. Okay, your mom wasn't very nice with your dad.
No.
Did she hurt him?
Well, she used to, like, my dad was a construction worker, so he'd come home on the weekends, and the first thing she'd say to him is, "Why are you looking so mean, Mr. Fox?" You know, and I learned later that that might have been their sex play, how they, you know, greeted each other in front of us. My mom wasn't necessarily, didn't allow us to be emotionally available to my dad. She kind of kept us away from each other.
All right, so now we go back to this other issue about you and men.
Okay.
You and your relationships with men. So you were never allowed to get close to your dad.
Kind of, sort of, yeah. But we were still close.
And you've been searching for him ever since.
Ah.
And you search for him and you look for him, but there's another part of you that's angry at him.
Okay.
For not stepping up to the plate, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Why didn't he step up and just claim, you know, hey, Mrs. Fox, I'm here. You know?
I always thought he did.
Yeah. Hey, Roz, thank you very much.
Okay.
For calling in. Thank you.
You're welcome.
212-957-2729. So early childhood drama very often are acted out in preferences, relationship preferences. Now, you see, a woman in modern society is not supposed to be submissive or weak. And those who nurture fantasies about being dominated often will be seen, you know, often be judged by others. A man with the same kind of thing would be judged. A man who has a fantasy of dominating will be judged as a monster or a sadist. So they have to be real careful with what they say to anyone. And it would be such a thing. Where is that? We have a... Sorry, friends. Where did that come from? That was a hidden phone. All right. 212-957-2729. We're going to take another call. Just hold on 1 second. Hey, Art, this is Armand DeMille.
Yes, sir.
Hi there, Art.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you. I wanted to, I remember when you were talking about this subject about a year and a half ago, and you said there's three things I'd like to hit real quickly. They're really important. The first thing is that you said in this type of relationship, it's because people have deadened their senses, and they're dead, so they don't feel love and lust anymore. They have to go further.
Good
That's
for you.
One. Well, I'm not sure. I don't. You know, I think it's partly that, but I'm
okay.
Not sure. I've been thinking about that.
Are you involved in this, Art? Do you find yourself in this kind of play?
I've done some research. I'm doing some writing on it. I also found what you said that I spoke to a woman recently, and she wanted that a lot of that, and instead, she suddenly just stopped, became don't call, don't contact, don't return calls. Totally, totally otherwise compliant.
Art, I'm kind of missing something in the pronouns here. You said it was you recently who addressed someone who thought that you that she wanted that kind of exchange and you wanted to try that kind of exchange with her, and then suddenly she cut off from you completely? Is that what you're saying?
Let's just say I was discussing it with her, yeah.
Yeah, and then suddenly she ran away from it.
Not that I necessarily wanted to, but I was discussing her interest in it, yes.
Okay. Yes,
and then when she got physical in the regular sense and just contacting, she ran away from it.
I noticed that you leave out pronouns and when you speak. It's a very funny thing to hear somebody do that. It's like, you know, it's like you're bleeding out. You don't say the word me. You don't say the word I. You don't say
the
word she.
I know the value of that, but then again,
I just can't understand what you're saying, because I don't know if you're talking about me or in general or you. That's all. I mean, pardon me. So when I see somebody leaving out pronouns, it usually means to me that they're trying to not personalize it. And I have great respect for you and what you're doing and your choices and what you're trying to do. And also your bewilderment. Here you are, somebody who is saying, you know, all right, I think I identified myself somewhat. Let me talk to somebody who I think may correspond with this. And you talk to her and she gets scared by it and runs away. I understand. Mm-hmm. That happens.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Sure. It must have hurt.
Well,
did it hurt?
A lot of time and effort into talking to people.
Okay, so you notice you did it again. A lot of time and effort into talking to people. Not I put a lot of time and effort.
Armand, I'm not unaccustomed to you having to correct people who call up and don't want to personalize it. But then again, with the government listening to every single thing we do.
Ah, okay, this is a good point.
There's a reason maybe we should talk about society in general.
Oh, all right, so I hear. So this may be a caveat to the very fact that people are listening and you don't want to identify yourself because it may be dangerous. In some way, that's a good criticism. Thank you, Art. Good.
Mm-hmm.
Good consideration.
Mm-hmm.
I like when people own things, when people talk about it personally, I generally could reach down to a different level of emotion. That's mm-hmm. the only reason I go in that direction.
No, sure, I understand that.
But you are talking about something that is, you are talking about something that does walk the edges and maybe, yeah, could be used against you, sure. I understand.
Well, when you're a writer, you like to write about different experiences, and certainly there's, you know, you read now in popular culture, it's becoming tens of millions of people are indulging in that.
Sure. Well, Art, I thank you. Thank you for the criticism. I'm sorry for the experience of having had somebody who, as you speculated over the idea of this kind of connection, was so afraid of it that had to disappear on you. I know
well,
that.
I don't
must
know
have hurt.
Why. I don't know why. I don't know exactly why. They don't. You know. They don't tell you. Even if they don't have any interest in anything else.
Too close. Sometimes you trigger a fantasy. Not you, Art, but someone of your type,
sure.
who may have been doing this with someone else, who may have corresponded with her, might have triggered in her her truest fantasy that she wanted this. And then she got afraid of herself. So people who very often get afraid of themselves, it's like, you know, the same thing will happen in love. Sometimes you meet somebody and they are dying to fall in love and they're dying to fall in love and they fall in love. And the very act of falling in love makes them disappear forever because it's just too vulnerable.
Mm-hmm.
So when a person usually disappears, they're either thinking one of two things. Either they think the other person is crazy, or they think the other person may have a gateway to their heart. And so for the safety of their own vulnerability, they disappear. And I'll tell you what I know about this, Art, for the sake of your research. Whenever this happens, usually you're better off.
Because you can't turn around their emotions.
Because their emotions have such potency that they don't want to be...
Go ahead.
Yeah, their emotions have such potency, they don't want to be turned around. Yes.
They just want to delve, they want to taste it, but they don't want to indulge.
Not yet. Not yet.
They're not ready.
Yep. Thank you so much for calling in.
There's one more interesting thing. She did not have a husband. She had two children out of in vitro fertilization. Now, isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I can't talk about that right now because I've got to move on, but I thank you very much, Art.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you. Great. If you ever finish your work, be sure to send me a copy of it.
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you, Armand.
Sure. You never know who's listening. You never know. It's true. 212-957-2729. We're almost coming to the end of our program. The first, at the beginning, like he says, you know, it's like you introduce a subject, you talk to somebody about it. Usually, it happens lightly one way or another. There's an active search. And then in this active search, you look for people and you try to find out who would be and who would might not be. You find out that people who dress a certain way are more likely to be corresponding to what you like. And it's very true. I mean, the whole appeal of high heels and who responds to that and who likes that appeal. Leather is another thing that's usually a symbol. Wearing things on your right wrist or your left wrist are another symbol. Usually if you have something on your right wrist, it means you're a dominant. On your left wrist, it means you're submissive. There's a whole bunch of things like that. We have time for one more call. Let's take Samantha, who's with us. Samantha, hi, this is Armand DeMille.
Yes, Armand, how are you?
I'm good.
Believe me, I've never ever called anyone ever.
Hey, thank you for that compliment. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
I've never listened to this show before, but today was the first time I was listening, and I just, you know, I had to call you. You're such an amazing person. Thank you for all the things that you're saying. Most of the things make sense to me, but I just have a personal question. Again, like the gentleman before me, you know, said not to say too many personal things, and I totally agree with him, but it's about my personal relationship. I'm a married woman. I don't have any kids. It's with my husband, and we have a wonderful life. We love each other. We've been married 5 years. The only question I had when you were talking about domination, that issue, I do not feel that much of domination from him, especially, you know, when it comes to sex. He likes to be dominated, but other things, you know, when things have to be done, or not even decisions, like when I actually have to do something around the house or saving money or paying bills and things like that, then he wants me to dominate.
Then he wants you to be in charge of the house.
Be in charge, yeah. Take care of everything because, you know, I'm not working at the moment. So I'm confused. And then part of me tries to tell him things, and then he would get offended that I'm the man. And then the manlyhood kind of, you know, overpowers him, and he would start yelling or he would get angry on things which don't really matter. And he would have reactions over things which are not even worth having a reaction.
Oh, Samantha, it sounds like you're in such a fragile place in life.
Yeah, I'm just too worried about it.
So fragile. You must. But let me ask you something, Samantha. You have kids in the house, too?
No, I do not. I do not have kids. We are planning to start the family.
Is your husband from Dublin by chance?
No, he is from Ireland.
Okay. Whereabouts?
I've never been to his village. I've never even been back to Ireland. I grew up in London myself.
Yeah, I can tell.
We just, you know, we moved here 2 years ago, for my study, and he was working, so.
So, his existence in Ireland, where he was he from a rural setting? Was he from?
He was. Yeah. Yes.
And what was it like in his house?
I've met his mother and father. They visited us, but I've never been back there. I've seen pictures.
Do you know how they lived?
His father is always very, you know, dominating. His mother kind of, although she was a smart woman, she was educated, but she never really, you know, wanted to do anything. So she kind of acted dumb.
Yes.
No offense. I don't want to be disrespectful, you know, to her, but she always kind of played a little. I mean, she just doesn't want to do or take responsibility of things.
So in your family, let me just, since I have about one more minute, in your family, who was in charge, your mother or your father?
My father is the one who takes all the decisions, but my mother has a very good say in everything.
Okay, I mean, do you want your husband to be more like your father or not?
I do, yes.
You do?
I do.
Okay, see, yes. That's the ideal you're fighting against. You're fighting against a belief system, and you're fighting against somebody who's probably being like the way he is, the way he would be in his family, and you want him to step up. What you need in here, Samantha, and I wish we had more time to tell you, you need to get somebody in the middle to help you talk about this one.
Oh, he would hate that. If I ever share any personal details, even with his mother, he would hate that so much. He has, you know, he made me promise this in the beginning of our marriage that, you're not going to share anything ever. We have other issues as well that I cannot really talk about.
Well, maybe you've just got to do it for yourself.
Yes. Yeah, I guess.
Because it sounds to me like you're beginning to crumble on the inside.
I'm too worried about I want to make him happy. I want him to feel good. I do everything he wants. I dress that way. I only meet the people he likes. I'm trying to do everything that, you know, because that's the way I grew up. My parents always wanted me to make my husband happy and have a great relationship. So a failed marriage is not an option here.
Yeah, I understand. Failed marriage could be continuing the one the way it is.
Exactly. So, you know,
Samantha, I'm glad. Listen, go to thepositivemind.com. Thepositivemind.com.
Okay.
Look at my website. You'll find an email address. You can get in touch with me. I'd love to speak to you more when you get a chance.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Cheers. Thank you very much.
And I'm glad you came by.
Take care. God bless you. Bye.
Bye. You can get in touch with us. So we won't be back with you next week, my friends. It will be the week after. We'll be back with you the week following that on the Wednesday. We'll be doing our special program. Be sure to tune in then. And you could, if you're missing programs, go to thepositivemind.com and listen to the archives. Friends, this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Help us with our recovery. Go to WBAI.org and help us by joining the buddy system. The more people we have on a recurrent basis giving money to the station, the less we'll have to have fund drives. Help us cut down on those and we'll do what we can for you. WBAI.org, buddy. Make a difference.
On Sunday, December 8th at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl will present pianist, composer, arranger, and producer Bob James. This program was originally presented in June of 2006 as part of WBAI's Hip Hop Takeover. Join us as we discussed the career of Bob James and his relationship to the hip hop art form. That's Sunday, December 8th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web.
If you already have much of this music, you're not going to have the unique collections that we have on this particular collection. Because when we set up a collection like this, we make sure it's unique. We do things with the music and to the music that's going to be unique so that when you have this, it's going to sound, even though you have Mali music, it's going to sound like no other collection of Mali music.
Definitely.
So, tune in Friday, December 13th from 12 midnight to 2 a.m. for the Midnight Ravers Fund Drive special, Bob Marley, Prophet on the Frontline. Tell your loved ones, tune in, and show your support. Again, that's Friday, December 13th from 12 midnight to 2 a.m. for the Midnight Ravers Fund Drive special, Bob Marley, Prophet on the Frontline. Only on WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM. Miss it and hate yourself.
The Midnight Ravers, where every show is a special.
And the previous program was The Positive Line with Armand DeMille. You can listen to that program Tuesdays and Wednesdays at 1 p.m. here on WBAI. Coming up next is The Real World with Mike Sargent, followed by Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott at 3 p.m. 4 p.m. is Letters in Politics with Mitch Jesrich, and at 5 p.m., The Tom Hartman Program with Tom Hartman. Once again, all heard here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. And as Sean Rhodes was